Welcome back to the podcast which empowers you to have frank and thorough discussions about the sensitive issues affecting people with life-changing injuries. I'm your host, Jo Edwards, and today we're discussing a complex but important topic for all those involved, discharge planning. So, what is discharge planning and how do we get it right? Well, luckily for me, I've got an esteemed expert and founder of specialist living care provider Allman Care here with me today, Julia Senna. Welcome to the podcast. Julia, before we jump in, can you just give me a little bit about your background and what Allman Care does?
So I qualified as a nurse in 2003. As an adult nurse, I specialised in critical care. I then also worked with adults and children with complex needs in the community. I had a near-death experience myself and then set up Almond Complex Care in 2009. We provide complex care for clients that need one-to-one or two-to-one care 24 hours a day. It is nurse-led, and we can also provide nurses 24 hours a day if required.
Okay, well, thanks, Julia. And that leads us actually in today's show, which is all about discharge planning. So, Julia, you're the expert. Can you tell us exactly what discharge planning is?
Discharge planning is organising the continuing care of a patient in their own home or in a specialist facility. The aim of discharge planning is to reduce hospital length of stay and unplanned readmission to hospital and to improve the coordination of services following discharge from hospital. It is good practice to commence discharge planning on admission. The National Institute for Health and Care Excellence says, and I quote, "Planning for a patient's discharge from hospital is a key aspect of effective care. Many patients who are discharged from hospital will have ongoing care needs that must be met in the community. This ongoing care comes in many forms, including the use of specialized equipment at home, such as a hospital-type bed, daily support from carers to complete the activities of daily living, or regular visits from district nurses to administer medication," end of quote. I'd like to also add that discharge planning is a complex activity, particularly in the context of new services offered outside hospital like intermediate care and continuing healthcare for patients with complex care needs. Effective discharge planning is crucial to ensure timely discharge and continuity of care. It also helps healthcare providers use limited resources most effectively and unnecessary readmissions to be avoided.
Okay, so on a recap, discharge planning is organising the continuing care of a patient in their own home or in a specialist facility.
That's right.
Okay. Obviously, that's not quite as simple as moving a patient from a hospital bed into their own. So can you expand a bit more about the thoughts and processes behind each move?
Okay, so I'll start off by explaining or trying to explain the types of discharge. There's two types. There's minimal or complex discharge. If you need little or no care, it's called a minimal discharge. If you require more specialized care after leaving hospital or a specialist unit, it is called complex discharge, which is what I'll be focusing on. There are two stages. Stage one involves referral being made to the CHC, which is continuing healthcare, and or social services. And where possible, a joint assessment is done by the health team, which is the CHC, and social services for the social aspects. A level of need is established which deems whether the patient is to receive a nursing or care support package. This is when care agents are contacted and asked to provide costs for care, and this is then sent to panel for approval, or for the care agents is then asked to go out and assess. The assessment will include both clinical and non-clinical needs. Clinical needs would encompass systems of the body such as breathing. So for example, if someone is ventilated, what type of ventilator are they on? How long are they ventilated for? Is it invasive or non-invasive ventilation, etc.? For clients with a spinal injury, you'd be looking at things like, do they have autonomic dysreflexia? How can we manage the risk? And what happens if someone has an autonomic dysreflexic episode? Feeding, for example, are they fed naturally, or are they peg fed, judge fed, or is it oral? It would also include medication, which will include emergency medication that would need to be administered in case of, for example, as I mentioned, if someone has had a dysreflexic episode. So this will also be included in the assessment. Non-clinical risk assessments would include For example, looking at the house, so environmental, is the house suitable for the client when they come back home?
So after stage one checks are carried out, we move on to stage two. So can you tell us more about that?
So stage two is done in the home. Stage one would have been done where the patient is, be it in a hospital or a specialist unit. The reason why it's done in the home is to assess the house if it's suitable for the patient to come home. So it would include carrying out an environmental risk assessment. Would also need to look at, is the house suitable for the patient? Will it need adapting? Do we need to refer to an occupational therapist? Do we need, for example, a ramp for the wheelchair to go in? Does the patient need a wet room or a bathroom? Do we need tracking hoists? The equipment and the consumables that are required. For example, if they are ventilated, you're looking at the consumables that are related to somebody who's got a tracheostomy. So, for example, the suction catheters, the different tracheostomies sizes that will be required, and the different types of equipment required for the person to be ventilated. For example, the oxygen cylinders, etc. This will also include liaising with local relevant charities and or hospices. For example, the Child Brain Injury Trust, Spinal Injuries Association, Headway, Rainbows, etc. Stage two will also include looking at whether the family or the patient are looking to employ their own care staff to deliver the care. And if that is the case, we need to see if the family are trained and equipped to carry out the care in a safe manner. If an agency is being used at this stage, this is when the agency is introduced, and the agents would also need to introduce their staff to the patient and commence their discharge process, which will include planning and minimizing extending the hospital stay and ensure they have appropriately trained staff.
Okay, so you briefly discussed the assessment of a home. Obviously, I can appreciate that most people's homes are not properly equipped to provide the high level of care needed by someone with severe physical or mental disabilities. So can you explain a bit more about house adaptations that a family might need to consider when welcoming a loved one back to their home?
When discharging clients with complex needs, families and or the patient will need to consider, for example, storage, because the amount of consumables that will be required can be quite a lot and can take up quite a lot of space. So you'll find some families, for example, they will have like a separate room just for consumables and equipment. Some have to end up using, for example, the garage because of the sheer amount of equipment and consumables. We also need to look at specialist things. For example, somebody with a spinal injury will need to have temperature controls in place because some people with a spinal injury cannot regulate their temperature. So where they will be having a bath in the shower, we need to ensure that there's automatic temperature controls in place in there. I'll give an example of a child that was discharged from the hospital into the community. This child, this little one, had a ventilator and quite a lot of equipment. And what the NHS ended up having to do is that the child had to have their own house that was next to the parents due to the sheer amount of consumables and also the package of care that was required. They would need to also consider wheelchair adaptations and disabled access, for example, ramps, and as I mentioned before, wet rooms as well. So those are the things that we need to consider.
So even if just a few of those measures were implemented into a family home, discharge planning means huge changes to that household. So how is the family considered in all of this?
So when a client is discharged with a care package, it has its benefits. So what would have usually transpired, someone with complex needs that have been in hospital for quite some time. So this then means the person can go home. And the advantage to this as well is the family can now rest at night. So if it's a 24-hour package or somebody who needs night care, they'll have a package of care and somebody can be covering and the family can rest. Family may have maybe now be able to have a life out of hospital, have some sort of normality. Family will be able to take holidays or time from care. The family can also have time, for example, if it's a pediatric package, they can now spend time with the siblings and other family members. They can also have respite from day-to-day hands-on care.
Okay, so you touched upon a care package. Without being glib, I'm hoping that this is more than a box of goodies that just falls from the sky.
No. So a care package is basically care that is developed to help the patient continue to live at home with the assistance of carers and or nurses. This may be funded by the patient themselves, continuing healthcare, social services, or from an insurance payout following an accident or clinical negligence. I stated the positives before of having a care package, but it has its negatives. For example, some families can find it very intrusive having, you know, strangers, an influx of strangers coming to your house to deliver the care. This is people you've never met before in your life, and it can be quite intrusive. Families may have siblings, and this can affect on daily timings on these, and vice versa. Those with children who have complex needs, they can only leave their children with trained people, and they cannot just say, oh, I'll go and ask a babysitter down the road to have to care for my child. They would have to have the training and know that child. There will also be pressure on other family members as well. There's also issues of dealing with rotas, and if the family chose to have a personal health budget where they will be in charge of the finances for the package of care, there's concerns about the assessment and reassessment from continuing healthcare and whether they're going to lose the funding or not. So all those things do have an impact on the family.
Okay, so with the impact on the family being significant, there must be some great reason behind all of this. You know, why do we move a patient from the extensive care of a hospital to their home?
It's always better for somebody to go home because it's their own environment. They can recover in a better way and quicker way. It improves well-being. It aids in healing and recovery. And patients can bond with their families. It's a much better environment to be in. And with the staff as well, they can choose, you know, who can come into their house and into their lives as well. So it has its benefits because you're in your own environment.
So I'm going to take a guess and say looking after someone with complex needs is never a cut and dry task here. What do you think we need to look at going forward?
Forward planning is key. Patients and their families need to be empowered by establishing realistic expectations, you know, and explaining challenges to them with, for example, from an agent's point of view with home care staffing right from the very onset. It's things like explaining that, you know, there'll be times when carers will leave, so that will mean a new person coming in. And what we have found as well is some of the families and the patients get close to a certain member of staff, and then that member of staff leaves. They find it quite difficult when a new person is introduced. It's also good to explain to the patients and their families that it's an ongoing assessment by, for example, the agency, continuing healthcare, and or social services. By this, it prepares them so that they're aware that there'll be people involved, there'll be quite a lot of people involved that will keep coming in and out of the life of the patient and the family. We have to also explain to the patient and the family that we have to manage the improvements and or deterioration of the patient so that they're aware and they'll have realistic expectations. There also has to be consideration for joint working with other organisations. So, for example, if it's a child who has complex needs and they go to school or nursery, there is also, if they go to nursery, is their carer going to go to nursery with them? If not, are the staff at the school and or nursery trained to look after this child? There's also the issue of transport. Who's going to take the child to the school? Is it going to be the school bus? And is there going to be anyone on the bus that's going to be competent enough to look after the child? Another point to look at is when it's a child that's got complex needs, when they're transitioning from pediatric continuing care to adult continuing care, the teams will change, and this can be quite a significant change for the family, having to deal with a totally new team when they were used to a team that they had been working with for years. They'll also need to consider sibling support for, again, pediatric patients, young carers, and to also refer to suitable local charities like Headway, Spinal Injuries Association, as I mentioned before. For those that are end of life, we also need to look at things like symptom control and palliative care planning.
Okay, Julia, a wide subject. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's podcast. Thank you, Julia, for joining us. If you have any questions about today's production, please get in touch with the experts at Almond Care. We've dropped all of their contact details into the episode notes with this recording. Thank you for listening.